The Trust for Sustainable Living presents Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast about the environment and the issues our planet faces. Today we will be talking to speakers from the TSL Partner Power Summit as part of our mini-series on biodiversity. Today's guests will be Cornelia Krug, Alayu Jeypusa, Pragna Vasupal, and Kekashan Basu. Today's episode is hosted by James Myers.
Well, good morning. It's Friday morning here on the TSL 2021 Partner Power Summit, and I'm here with Pragna Vasupal, Alayu Jeypusa, Kekashan Basu, who are all with the Green Hope Foundation, and Cornelia Krug is with the University of Zurich. And they've just given a very interesting presentation. Alayu and Pragna explained the work that the Green Hope Foundation does across the world in many countries that involves youth in protecting biodiversity and also educating youth. And Cornelia discussed the role that that her group at the university plays with interacting with the public and with youth as well. And so I just wanted to have a little discussion here to explore some of the themes that were discussed and maybe discuss next steps that the participants see as possible. So welcome, everybody. I just thought I'd start with a question about what each of you thinks is the one most important thing that we can do now to give today's youth the power to protect their future environment. I think, Alayu, you mentioned there are 1.8 billion youth on the planet now. Obviously, their future is, you know, the most important thing coming up. And is there one single thing that we could do now that would just provide them with the power to have that confidence in the future of their environment? Let's throw that question open to any of you who'd like to start with that.
Yeah, I would like to answer that question. To reiterate what I just said during the discussion, one of the most important things that we can do is provide the youth a platform, but first educate the youth, which is in accordance with the SDG 4 quality education. So if we educate the youth about the problems that and problems and threats that we are facing currently, that way we can help them be more informed and environmentally conscious.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And just to echo what Pragna and Alayu stated in during the panel, you know, localizing the SDGs and localizing the solutions is absolutely critical. And we need different solutions for different challenges in different regions. But the one common thing that every single person can do is begin by educating themselves and then educating their family, educating their community. And, you know, education, as Pragna just said, runs as a common thread amongst all of the SDGs as well, with 4.7.1 being about education for sustainable development, but then also being echoed in like goal 12, like 12.8.1 and goal 13.3. So it's like, it's really important that we begin with that education process, and that is why schools are so important. And in areas where that's not possible with formal education, organizations such as Green Hope Foundation come in to provide the non-formal education so that children and young people all around the world have that opportunity to learn. And once they learn, only then can they take action. So yeah, education and particularly education for sustainable development is crucial.
Thank you, Pragna and Kekashan. And tying the fact that education sort of permeates those sustainable development goals of the UN, I think, is very key. Alayu and Cornelia, what your thoughts on one single most important thing we can do now? Is it education? Is it something else?
Definitely, the first and most important thing to do definitely would be education, because you know, you see, environmental education should be one of the most critical thing now that we all should consider while are dealing with young people. Because just look at the stats. I mean, we have 1.8 billion, as I said earlier, as young people, and most of them, they are 10 to 14. Ever in the centuries or ever now exist, 14 to 10 to 14 ages. So as we educate, as you provide the platform for education to young people, definitely they're going to grow into having the mind of being more of a ambassador to their environment, and they're going to live sustainably. So education is a factor.
Exactly. And now coming in as the parent is, I think what I need to do, what I can actually tell parents to do is, on the one hand, actually listen to your children. Make sure that you take them seriously, that you respect them, that you actually take on board their opinions as well, that you actually have that conversation with them, why this is of importance. And then, I mean, the one power that adults have compared to the youth is actually we can vote. That actually when you go and vote, you actually think about not just what's good for voting for you, but actually what will be good for your children and your grandchildren. That you really take that into account when you're selecting your representatives. I think this is a way we can actually, as parents, we can actually act on behalf of the youth, that we can take you seriously, take your opinions on board, and actually then vote essentially with this in mind. I think that's the important thing as well.
Well, thank you, Aliyu and Cornelia. Just I like that idea of listening as well as educating. I think that's so important. And I think as adults, we don't listen enough or as deeply as we should. And one of the questions I think was during the presentation was how governments can be informed by youth in this process. And it was encouraging to hear the perspective of Green Hope, for example, that working with rather than against governments is a positive way of doing things. And it's encouraging, you know, some governments, like the government of New Zealand, for example, has a minister of youth to actually represent the voice of youth. And so I think these things are happening now across the planet, and hopefully they will happen soon and with enough significance that people will start to listen, as you said, Cornelia. I'm wondering too, how do we reach even more schools? You know, I think we've heard from Pragna and Aliyu about, you know, all of this cooperation among the schools that you've reached. And I think, Cornelia, you spoke about how the University of Zurich is actually working with some perhaps elementary or secondary schools to promote education. How do we reach even more schools and encourage more networking and collaboration between the schools? Is there a single thing that you think would be helpful? And Cornelia, I want to ask you, especially here too, because you mentioned during your presentation about games and Olympiads, and you know, just so I'll ask you from your perspective, whether that kind of thing can be expanded, and Pragna and Aliyu and Kekashen, your ideas on increasing that networking between schools.
Exactly. So the example that I was giving, I'm giving it the proper name now. It was the Tigerberg Olympiad. So it was named after the Tigerberg Nature Reserve in the heart of the city of Cape Town. And it was actually one of the reserve managers who had a background in education who came up with the idea to run this Olympiad involving the different schools in around the reserve. And that was actually quite interesting because it's Cape Town. So you had the very rich white kids in Belleville and then the poorer kids in the township. And they all came together in that nature reserve and they were being taught actually. And then she enrolled the various researchers that were working on the Tigerberg and then the friends of the Tigerberg as well in actually teaching them about the reserve and taking them out for activities. And I think this is an excellent way of, I think, an excellent model that we can actually emulate as well, that you have the reserve managers working with the schools in the area, actually helping them with education. And then, so I think that's one thing that worked really well, and that is a model that can be taken further. And then also a lot of it is teacher education, as I said, it's like that when universities and the relevant schools actually think about the curriculum for teachers that are actually adapted to the current challenges that we're facing at the moment. And then again, teachers networking with each other and then learning from each other what is happening at different times.
Thank you, Cornelia. That's really encouraging. And I'm just wondering, you know, Pragna, Aliyu, or Kekashen, your thoughts on this idea of increasing networking. I think somebody mentioned during the presentation about school clubs and, you know, are these prevalent enough? Are there as many of them as there should be? How do we encourage growth like that and networking between them? Your thoughts on that question?
Yes, to just add on to what Ms. Cornelia just mentioned, one of the main things that we can also do is using creative modes of communication, such as either digital media or through art, music, dance, which is what we at Green Hope Foundation also do. This way we can help break down the language barrier and meaningfully engage with the students that we are interacting with. And to answer your question, James, about school clubs, school clubs are definitely relevant because it shapes young minds from an early age. And definitely we need to get more participation from students and schools in this area.
Elia, your thoughts?
So definitely we, like all of the previous speakers gave their insight on this. We have to definitely find common interests because we have this barrier of, okay, this is what I like and this is, and then most of the time, if you take issues like day to school so that you can, make it more bigger, it is kind of difficult. So like Pragna said, one of the ways that we break those barriers is through sports, through music, through arts. And in that, you will find that most of the people that you are dealing with, you all have a common interest. And with that, you will relate to them more easily than you just coming to tell them, hey, I want us to work on this. I want us to work on stopping biodiversity laws. I want us to work on minimizing pollution. So if you take it to them in a way that you are going to relate, that's going to help a lot. So I think it's through sports or finding the common interest of the both parties.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with what was just said. And that is something we at Green Hope Foundation firmly stand by, that in all of our work, we never tell people what to do. It is more understanding the challenges that they face, and our members are on the ground, so they face the challenges firsthand as well. So they know what solutions are needed, and we just act as that catalyst, and that goes for schools as well. To address the other point about just schools outreach, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And honestly, that is what we've seen in our work. And, you know, with this part about teacher education, that's something that Green Hope works on, as Pragna and Liu both talked about. But, you know, teachers have also reached out to us thinking outside the box and wanting to get environmental and sustainability education moving beyond the club stage and actually something that is normalized and part of the education system. And, you know, there are examples as well throughout history, like Nobel Peace Laureate Rabindranath Tagore started Shantiniketan in West Bengal, and to this day that remains one of the premier nature-based learning institutions in the world. And it's really important that we also look at examples like that and work to scale up, replicate, adapt in different areas. That is something that we at Green Hope Foundation definitely do, and specifically in areas where there aren't any schools, but education is still even more important over there. So working to ensure that we don't leave them behind. So yeah, that I think that if we have that passion, we can move ahead, find a way when Green Hope Foundation started, that is how we moved forward. And also, if there are teachers and students who want to bring about change, they're also going to find a way and make sure that, you know, they're able to create change in their own zone of influence.
Thank you, Kikishan. And certainly that idea of, you know, helping to empower teachers with the knowledge that they need to help to educate the students, I think is so important. And Nelly, you spoke so well about finding those common interests, you know, so that the youth can educate each other. And I think that's maybe educating each other is really a big part of this maybe. And so I just wanted maybe to ask as a last question, kind of from your own personal experience and your own personal perspective, you know, what's the most encouraging sign that you see now that we are on a path to a sustainable future? Is there one single most encouraging sign now? And I don't know, Cornelia, maybe starting with you, your thoughts on that.
Oh, yes. actually, we had a vote in Switzerland 3 weeks ago where we actually put the vote. It's like where people were asked to vote for a new carbon regulation, new law against pesticides, and then also protecting drinking water, and they were all rejected. So I feel a bit, at the moment, I felt really despondent because I thought, we don't care about that we're polluting the water, that we're actually making the planet inhospitable for future generations. But then I actually look at around me and then I see what's happening, exactly what the Green Hope Foundation does, what Friday for Futures does, they now rising up again. So that actually youth taking action and they say, no, we actually need to be taken seriously and we need to be listened to. And I think there is the hope there. The youth is actually really asserting themselves. And I think so there's hope there. And it's just a moment I go like, okay, we just please listen. It's important. So I haven't given up hope. So firstly, thanks to you. Thank you.
Yeah. The encouraging is that kind of grassroots kind of, you know, the power rising up from the youth and that voice, I think, you know, we hope that voice will be heard and heard loudly. And you're right. I think that's happening now. Pragna, Aliu, Kekashen, your thoughts on the most encouraging sign in your own experience that you see now?
In my personal opinion, one of the most encouraging signs would actually be the international cooperation and collaboration during the pandemic. Now, the pandemic has caused havoc in many different parts of the world, the entire world, and has trained and has given us like a wake-up call to finally start taking action. And this is a great example of international cooperation because different countries, peoples, organizations all came together to actually save the people and the planet. And that is one of the most encouraging signs in my opinion.
Thank you. Yes, out of the great challenge of the pandemic arises this opportunity. That's a powerful message. Aliu, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so before I be so very optimistic in answering the questions, let me first recognize the fact that we still have a lot of work to do as a world. I mean, we are making some remarkable marks, but then we have a lot of work to do. One of the most encouraging things that I really see that we are starting from somewhere is a rapid increase of the urgency being given to environmental issues. I mean, it is really encouraging that I'm seeing a lot of, not just from other folks, but from youth-based organization. I have this strong conviction that definitely in near future, we will be able to say, yes, I think we are on the path of decreasing some of those effects that will come to us as humans. So one of the very encouraging one is youth actions and the urgency being given to discussing environmental issues.
Thank you. Yeah, and certainly I think we are all hearing a lot more about it now. And I think that is a very encouraging sign. Kekashen, your last words from you and your thoughts.
Absolutely. You know, Green Hope Foundation will turn 9 years old this year. And 9 years ago, the amount of attention that was given to sustainable development and environmental conservation compared to the attention it's given now, I think that is definitely a sign of hope. But our organization, I mean, our name has hope in it. And, you know, we see our successes in every single small action that we take, whether that is bringing a smile on someone's face or being able to restore an entire island of mangroves. So I think that for myself and for us as an organization, just seeing those small successes every day, understanding the importance of multi-stakeholder dialogue and collaboration and youth actions, and just moving forward and understanding that we just have to keep going and keep doing our work and looking at those small successes and then scaling up from that to create a better world for all. So I would say that's what gives me hope, and that is what gives me hope for a sustainable world.
Well, thank you, Kekashen, and certainly congratulations on the 9 years of your vision and an effort growing here and you know, for being here with us at the 2021 Partner Power Summit. I think your voice is so important, and the hope and stories that you bring to the great potential that lies ahead is so encouraging. So I wanted to thank you all, Pragna, Cornelia, Aliu, and Kekashen, for being here with us today and for taking the time to speak to us. And let's look forward to the next steps that I think the world is preparing for. So thank you for your insights and thoughts, and I wish you all very well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast by the Trust for Sustainable Living. Thanks to today's guests, Cornelia Krug, Aliu J. Pusa, Pragma Vasupal, and Kekashan Basu. Hosted by James Myers. Organized by Jasmine Barrett and Zeke Tinney. Music by Billy Painter. Find us online by going to trustforsustainableliving.org. Thank you for listening.